Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Baltgalvis et al. Titled, Exercise Performance and Peripheral Vascular Insufficiency Improve with AMPK Activation in High-Fat, Diet-Fed Mice. This article published online February 21st, 2014. My guests today are Editor-in-Chief Irv Zucker, Lead Author Todd Kinsella, and Expert Michael Massett. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. As outlined very nicely in this study, peripheral artery disease affects millions of Americans and results in the inability to perform even moderate levels of exercise. Importantly, the intermittent claudication that results in these patients results in severe pain, which contributes to exercise intolerance in part. Current therapy for this disease revolves largely around surgical interventions. While surgical therapy may increase muscle perfusion, exercise intolerance is still significant in many of these patients. This suggests other mechanisms at play that limit perfusion. Todd, could you please briefly describe the model you used and summarize the major findings of the study and the rationale for using an activator of AMP kinase?
Sure. The focus of this study was AMP kinase. It's a master regulatory protein that senses cellular energy status, and it's used by cells to adjust to metabolic demand, such as that triggered by exercise. And those adjustments lead to both acute and chronic changes, typically in metabolism. And that's really to help cells cope with ongoing and future demand. In many cases, those adaptations are generally considered favorable for health. For example, AMPK activity can lead to increases in insulin sensitivity or increases in mitophagy, which is important for maintaining healthy pools of mitochondria. So there's been a lot of interest in making AMPK activators and then exploring their utility in various diseases. And the current study really needs to be viewed through that lens. So to get started, we had generated a series of indirect AMPK activators. We knew there were numerous links between AMPK and exercise adaptation, and we set out to test them for benefit in the context of exercise intolerance. More specifically, we thought it would be most useful if we used a mouse model of aging, inactivity, and obesity, because there are parallels here to some human diseases that we were interested in, like intermittent claudication. And here's what we found. Sedentary aged mice fed a high-fat diet, so they had overlaying obesity, developed profound vascular insufficiency over time. So their limb muscles became poorly perfused, and importantly, they were incapable of responding robustly to exercise with proper increases in limb perfusion. Now, in this model, we couldn't find evidence of occlusive atherosclerosis, which was a little surprising at first, but we think the perfusion deficits were likely the result of a dysfunctional response of the microvasculature. And as these problems progressed over time, the mice sequentially experienced significant drops in exercise performance. And all of this was pretty exciting to us because microvascular and muscle dysfunction are now increasingly recognized as important components of intermittent claudication. And this seemed like a real opportunity for us to test how AMPK activation might prove beneficial in this context. So the short answer is that we do in fact think AMPK activation can have benefit here, because R118 treatment of mice with established overt disease improved whole body exercise performance, improved muscle function and endurance, so limb muscles became less fatigable, and led to a substantial rescue of the limb perfusion during exercise. Mechanistically, we could see evidence of increased nitric oxide bioavailability and increases in mitochondrial enzymatic capacity. So the bottom line, because of these characteristics, I think activators of AMPK might serve peripheral artery disease patients well.
I think the data you presented are very clear. Michael, I wonder if you could comment on the significance of these findings, especially the use of AMP kinase in therapy.
Sure. This paper was really kind of interesting to me for a number of reasons. And I think this therapeutic use of AMPK activators is quite interesting, mainly because this compound has some beneficial effects, but the changes that we sometimes see with pharmacological approaches to activating particular pathways can be extremely large and extremely dramatic. And it seems that this activator has some profound beneficial effects without being essentially a sledgehammer to the system. And so it is a little bit more subtle, yet still has these beneficial effects. And of course, from an exercise standpoint, being an exercise, trained in exercise physiology, I think it's important because as we look at therapeutic interventions for diseases such as peripheral arterial disease, this could be one approach to improve an individual's ability to exercise and eventually allow them to perform exercise without any therapeutic intervention. And so it may produce some beneficial effects, which eventually lead them to essentially weaning away from some of these therapeutic agents.
Right. Todd, let me raise a couple of questions that maybe you can respond to. Clearly, one of the mechanisms here is activation of nitric oxide and ostensibly eNOS. I wonder what effects R118 has on other isoforms of NOS, such as nNOS, and whether or not this agent gets across the blood-brain barrier to alter perhaps sympathetic outflow to skeletal muscle.
Great question. I don't think CNS-related mechanisms account for our observations, at least not directly. We've studied the tissue distribution of R118, and it does not cross the blood-brain barrier. But we still think it might be useful in counteracting disease-associated increases in sympathetic tone, but this is likely to occur through peripheral mechanisms like activating phosphorylation of nitric oxide synthase. And since our study only examined the endothelial-specific isoform, eNOS, I don't have any data in hand to answer whether or not other isoforms are activated, but I can speculate based on the work of some others. So Thomas Hawk and Greg Steinberg at McMaster University recently showed that activated AMPK can also phosphorylate the muscle-specific splice variant of nNOS. And this can lead to increased nitric oxide production from muscle itself. So one would expect that R118-driven activation of AMPK would also enhance nitric oxide production directly from muscle.
Michael, any further comments on any of these specific pathways?
I think there are maybe two things that I'd like to add. One, I'd like to ask Todd if this compound has any effect on adenosine. And so this might be somehow related to the functional sympatholysis with this increased sympathetic outflow that we might see with peripheral arterial disease. And so does this R118 have any effect on adenosine levels, which may also contribute to the increase in nitric oxide production?
Great question. We didn't measure adenosine directly, so I don't have an answer specifically with data, but we do know that these complex 1 inhibitors alter the ratio of AMP and ATP in the cells, and that's likely to impact adenosine metabolism and the levels of adenosine.
The other question I had for you, to put you on the spot a little bit, is the R118 had an effect on mitochondrial function and essentially oxygen consumption. And so I was curious, with nitric oxide having an effect on potentially contractile efficiency, there's been some data to show that nitric oxide in the heart can actually affect efficiency of contraction, which may alter VO2. And so do you have any idea about maybe systemic oxygen consumption in these animals that go along with this improved exercise capacity?
We didn't measure VO2 or VCO2 yet. I think it is a next step for us, and I think it would be very interesting to see functionally where these improvements in exercise performance come from. And certainly increased efficiency with oxygen utilization would be an area of interest.
I don't know if you had a chance to look at a recent paper published in AJP Endo by Sasaki et al., in which they showed that PPAR gamma might be a good activator of AMP kinase.
I'm aware of the study, and I think the results are interesting. What they basically found was that exercise resulted in an increase in a subset of genes within muscle, namely PPAR gamma, PGC1 alpha, and lipoprotein lipase. Now, certainly many more genes in that are important for adaptation to exercise, but this was their specific focus. And interestingly, they could induce a similar profile by treating animals with an AMPK activator, ICAR. And they went on to characterize that in some mechanistic detail. Now, from my perspective, the important point isn't whether or not these particular genes, PPAR gamma or LPL, have a specific role in exercise adaptation, because they clearly do, but rather that AMPK does more than just help control acute rapid metabolic changes. It also has a role in facilitating more stable, long-lasting adaptations. And it does this by modifying transcription factors or other master regulators like PPAR gamma or PGC1 alpha. So in this way, AMPK can influence a very broad collection of important genes.
Well, I want to thank you both for this interesting discussion. It seems like AMP kinase activation is a potential therapy for patients with peripheral artery disease down the road. Kara, back to you.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.